The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
What a 1.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are here, as we do every Monday between 2 to 3, where we discuss important things. We discuss education, we discuss how to look after ourselves, how to make the world a better place, how to make ourselves better people, how to manage, how to focus, how to be on tune with what we want to achieve and get in life. A lot happening on the show, as usual. And today we're going to be talking about quite an important topic, which is very connected to everything we're busy with in the last month. As you know, we all have our hearts standing with Israel, and we all have our thoughts with the kidnapped people that are in Gaza currently, which raises also the question of where kidnapping and trauma of that sort comes into our personal life here in South Africa, here in the community. And we're going to be talking about a similar situation. While, as I said, we all have the kids, families, women, children, everybody kidnapped for a month, we also have in our community our short-term kidnapping situations, meaning many times I meet people here in South Africa that have been held up in their homes for a few hours, that had somebody break into the house, a home invasion, and then being in that position, tied down for 2 hours, 3 hours, for the night, for etc. And that creates huge amounts of trauma, and we're going to be discussing it from two angles. And as we know, we always have a few professionals here on the show. So on the one hand, we're going to have a forensic and clinical psychologist here on the show. Dr. You know what? I'm actually going to allow you, doctor, to say your name and introduce yourself shortly. And then on the other hand, we have here Herman Mossman, who is the manager of TSU International Kidnapping Hostage Survival, and manages that side of things. And we want to touch on the trauma and what happens after, but we also want to talk about how to survive during the act. What do we do and don't do? And maybe we'll see even the correlation between Herman, between your work, and between the psychological work. What can be done at real time to minimize later and future trauma? So a lot to discuss, a lot to talk. And before we start this interview, I have to say, on a very personal level, and this is something that's actually very close to heart to me, and why this interview is way more important than you would think it is. As I said, besides for the fact of our hearts being in Israel, quite a few years ago, in the show, out of nowhere, a very well-respected psychologist called in as a listener and said, you know, you mentioned trauma, you didn't speak about home invasions, but from my experience, I want to tell you what are the things that are recommended to do in a home invasion. And she went through a whole list of things, which I won't repeat because I have the top authority professional on the show, and I'll let him do that. But a whole bunch of things that we can do in order to prevent, you know, losing control of the situation and managing. And I thought it was nice of her. But what happened is literally 2 weeks later, in the middle of the night, a group of four men came into the house, held me, my wife, my children, and we were in real-time situation. And I think that psychologist who called in really changed everything for us. I think that the fact that just 2 weeks prior than that, I was speaking to this therapist on the show, I actually knew what to do, and I actually managed it, and it changed everything for us. So I think it's extremely important that we go and we discuss. It's been quite a few years since we've done it last time, and I think it's definitely very important, so I'm not going to waste more time. And good afternoon. We'll start with you. You're on the show, Dr. Gauda.
Jada Del Fabro.
Okay. Dr. Jada Del Fabro. Okay. Yeah. So just introduce yourself for a moment.
Sure. I'm a clinical and forensic psychologist, so I do therapies and psychotherapies with often victims of trauma. And then on the other side, I am involved in understanding the way the criminal mind and criminal behavior works. So
Okay, amazing.
Expect. And,
okay, so looking forward to see how to deal from that therapeutical side of things. And we have here Herman Bosman. Herman, good afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good afternoon to you and the listeners.
A word about what you do, your company?
Well, we basically assist individuals and companies in kidnapping incident management and prevention, also setting up programs in hostage survival, situational awareness, and making sure that we have a program that should something happen, how to deal with it. We also have a process whereby we assist with profiles. Should you trust us with that, that will be compiled. You will receive training preempting should there be an incident on how to go about, and your family will then be part of that program.
Is it something that, as South Africans, we should be looking into of preparing for such an event?
Well, currently, we all used to having vehicle insurance and making sure that our homes and property are well protected. And that should something happen, you phone your insurers, you know, tell them that this has happened to you, and they facilitate the process, having your vehicle registration numbers and all the detail already on the system. But what happens if you're taken? What happens if something happened to you? Who knows a lot and enough about you to be able to assist properly? And in that moment, when everything is in a disarray and everybody running around is very traumatic, what if you pre-planned for an event like that? Now, I know the show can be listened to by anybody, so I'm going to just talk as safe as possible, but we want to make sure that you, your family, your company are best prepared to, when that happened, to manage that unforeseen, very painful trauma that you must go through, and managing it as correctly as possible. There's a lot that one can do before the time that's very difficult if you only start to look at it after it's already happened.
So before we go into what we can do, which I do think it's quite important, and, you know, the first step that comes to mind is better be prepared, even if it's not as pleasant as we want. But Dr. Goda, from your side, is there any harm in discussing preparation to an event, recreating extra trauma or extra worries by educating our families, our kids, our communities, and, you know, it's not worthwhile being that prepared considering the amount of risk, or it's actually a safer thing to do?
So I think it depends on how you do it. I mean, definitely I think the preparation is important. I mean, as Mr. Bosman said, you know, before the time, because, I mean, it sounds like you coped very well in terms of remembering what you had to do. So, you know, it helped you through the experience. But for many people, it's sort of fight, flight, freeze in that traumatic situation. And it's very difficult to access that information. So I do think there is value in preparation, but it would have to be done in a way that was age appropriate. So not too, and sensitive to children's ages and, you know, what you could tell them that would be non-traumatizing and not create more fear, but rather just make them feel empowered.
So we're looking for a balance between not scaring them and at the same time knowing what to do at real time, which maybe we do have to take our break. But when we come back, I think let's look into a bit more of detail of how to actually create that balance of being prepared, being, you know, up to date of what we can do without creating too much trauma. Anything you want to ask, any comments from any of the listeners, anything you want to share, add, comment, 34519 is the SMS line, Telegram 061-895-1019.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch Show by G. We are back in the middle of a fascinating discussion. We are discussing preparing ourselves for crime. And, you know, there's so much to do and discuss about it. Obviously, as I said, our hearts are with the huge amounts of kidnapped kids, families overseas, saying that we do have our kidnapping happening here, at least the mini kidnaps and even just being held up. It doesn't, you know, you could be held up for 2 minutes until they take your car. You could be held up for 3 hours in your house. You could be whatever it is. And there's a lot of trauma and a lot that we need to look at is from preparing ourselves to it, dealing with it, and then afterwards where we go with that. So right before the break, Herman Bosman, who's the manager at TSU, international kidnapping and hostage, survival and, a professional in that area was speaking about what are the things that we can plan. And we spoke with Dr. Gada saying that it's, if you do prepare yourself in an appropriate way and age appropriate and sensitive to the circumstance, then it's fine. And it's actually the great idea. So let's go back to you, Herman, and let's look at, basic things that we want to do to prepare ourselves. A, to minimum trauma, B, to know actually how to act, and what are the options that we have besides for freeze, flight, and fight, etc.?
Well, pretty much if you end up in a life-threatening situation and you've never considered or contemplated that this may happen and how you should act, it is an overwhelming situation because you don't know, you don't have a file to draw in your, that you've pre-planned. So, what we believe and that what we've done, and just my background of 30 years in the police service and going for 9 years that I'm now in private practice, we've seen it time and time again that people that's been trained have thought through processes pertaining to this, know how to deal and manage it much better than people that have just blocked it out and don't want to talk about it. And when it happens, it is so overwhelming and shocking. And I'm talking from personal experience, both people that I'm personally, that I know personally very well, and incidents that I've managed that has been through cases and incidents like this. So first of all, is to identify what is it that we are talking about, what is it that you can expect, and this is an empowerment thing. It is not a scaring approach, and I 100% agree with what was said, that we need to do it in a correct manner, the correct age group, and also be sensitive for how you bring it across, and I 100% agree with that. So it is to
empower. What are the points we're looking at? So if we look at a practical level.
Well, first of all, we need to understand the person coming there. What is it that you're looking at? What type of people, how do they abnormally conduct this? What is it that you can expect when you're inside your home? If we just use the home invasion, house robbery example and not an endured long-term kidnapping. So what do they normally do? What is it that you can expect the moment they approach your home and how they go about? We even start before that in how to prevent that. Don't open your gate when somebody's tailing you and driving into your driveway. Is there a sign that you can communicate with your family, etc., to have a protocol and making sure that the family understands the protocol. So that is something that is also very important, but also to understand how these guys operate. What is normally the procedures that we've seen and their approach to the families? There's different categories and different types. And when I mean that is some people will definitely be there and out to be there to just steal and just take and go. And we had a few of those recently in Cape Town and the Helderberg area where I live, where we've seen that, and it was purely about money, and they were very kind to the people that actually burgled, robbed, and detained. Still very traumatic and painful. But then you have other cases where there's a completely different type of approach, and that the detail of which I won't discuss on air, but where they harm the families to an extent that maybe that we've seen happening currently with what happened in Israel. So that is the two opposites that you're dealing with. So what is
your approach? Is it a reality here? And obviously with no details and nothing, but is it a reality of something we need to worry about?
Well, I must say there's been a major decrease in those type of incidents over the last period of police reported statistics. But still, the numbers are still very scary and high and underreported, as some of them are reported under completely different crime codes. The majority of cases where people comply, not resist, not try anything that scares these people, because remember, they are from their side also scared, anxious, and inclined to overreact. They do not always know what to expect back from the property and the people there. The only thing that is certain, if they burgle the property walls knowing that you are there, they've already made that part of their planning should you resist on what they're going to do to overcome that. So that was already part of their planning. Yours was to be at home, to be relaxed, to be in your safe area, and not to think that something will happen something like this will happen on your property and at your home. So just to bear in mind that when they come, if you resist, that is what you can experience from them. So the best will be to comply and let them have what they want.
That's a, Herbert, I have to say, I want to highlight the point you said, because that's a fascinating point, is that, you know, we always know that generally we're saying that if you don't resist, they're not going to fight with you, nothing's going to go wrong, and you can give them your money. But you're saying even more than that, they are actually planning in a case of resistance that you are not planning. So they have a great advantage over you in case of resistance, but you will be much safer if there isn't a resistance.
Well, absolutely, because they are afraid. We've seen it on how many times people will ask, there's been a smash and grab or at a traffic light. Why did the person have to stab him? Why did the person have to do the following? Those guys that's doing it, they are scared. They do not know what to expect back. And if you do fast movements, look threatened, they react to that. And the moment they react is where people get harmed or injured because of their reaction and they, because of the fact that they're very scared. Now, I've worked with criminals for many years, and I can tell you they are extremely scared. And many of these cases, and yes, I know there's various categories, one rules, there's the professionals, there's the ones that are not so scared, but in general, many of these guys that does this, they want to go home alive. They have a girlfriend at home, and they want to go and spend the money and brag about what they've done and what they have. And the moment there's resistance, it's already part of their planning on how they're going to go about to overcome this.
I get it, 100%. So, obviously, you know, not resisting and staying calm and chilled and you know, complying is extremely important, as well as you said the planning before of how to make sure, you know, preventing, nobody comes in, having a code with the family, was a very interesting thing, that if your child rings the bell and says a certain word, you know there's a problem, and perhaps that's something we should be doing. Yeah.
There's just one thing I need to add maybe before you move on, and okay. That is, I would also advise is that you identify an evacuation and a safe room plan for your property and your house. But should there be an alert and somebody come onto your property, that you know where to go, to know how to lock, who to contact, what to press, have a plan. Because there you are one up. This is your property. You know the ins and the outs, and you know your plan, which they don't know. So you must use what you can to your advantage.
So while resistance is, they have the advantage because they planned for it, when it comes to evacuation, hiding, finding a safe place, you have the heads up because you know the house and the property and you planned for that. So that's where you're going to be in a much better place. Amazing. And, do you think it would be harming for kids to be practicing where's the safe place at home and what to do in case of an invasion?
Again, I mean, if it's done in an age-appropriate way, no. I mean,
what would be the age-appropriate way?
So, I mean, what I also wanted to say is that in this day and age, unfortunately, I mean, these children will know of crime. You know, it will be a classmate or, you know, they get to know that these things happen. So that in itself can create fear and anxiety, which with a plan, and they can feel more empowered about. So an age-appropriate way would be, first of all, to affirm that the adults have got it under control. So, you know, mom, dad, whoever, will take the lead.
So we're preparing, but we know exactly what we're preparing for. We're chilled, we're calm, we're not nervous. We're just doing our drills, and we're preparing.
And your part is to do X, Y, or Z, you know, to go into this spot or, you know, and but to really affirm that, you know, the adults have got it under control.
Okay. And so let's talk a bit about when something, God forbid, is happening. So you find yourself with a group of criminals holding you up in your home or in the car or whatever it is. How do you keep the environment calm and controlled? What would you tell your children? What would you tell your spouse? What would you tell the people? What are the dynamics to manage a situation like that?
So if you have spoken about it before and discussed the plan, you know, be reverting to that. But I think, first of all, to calm yourself, to take some deep breaths, to, you know, get your thinking going. Because
get your mask on before the child.
Yeah,
on the
exactly.
Plane. Okay.
And then to, you know, do what you can to reassure the other sort of passengers in the car, your children, your wife, and just reiterate the fact that you're just going to go, you know, along with whatever these people want and, you know.
And we're going to be fine. Just listen to them, relax and chill. is that a time also to talk about what will happen afterwards, or just focus on, you know, now we're okay, we're calm, stay chilled, and we love you, we're here.
Yeah, and you know, this will pass, but we just got to stay calm.
Okay. And the message, Herman, and I'll go back to you, and the message to the criminals, how do I present to them that we're not going to fight, we're not going to resist, we're chilled, we're good? How would you communicate that?
Well, the calmer you are, the calmer their reaction to your conduct in general may be. So I'm really generalizing here, and I know there's always exceptions, and people can phone in with examples where it was different. So, but just in general, the human way of conducting yourself is, if I shout and scream at you, you shout and scream back at me. And we see it with road rage and everything on the roads regularly. But the moment there's a confrontation from the criminal side, and you show your hands and you say, you can really have, and you've got an open face, but not with a condemning body attitude and dominating and swearing back at that person, you can calm that person, and in a spirit of, hey, have what you want, take what you want, it is all good, understand what you want to take here, and communicating that, making it very clear to that person, you're not going to fight, you're not going to resist, you can really take what you want. I've read on articles on the internet that say, don't speak to the intruder, or don't speak to your attacker. It is absolute rubbish. That's a human, that's an individual that you can communicate with, and if you're honest with that person in your conduct and letting him have what he wants, it is absolutely no problem having that conversation with him. And also, when they ask you questions, you be open and honest back at that with that individual. The different story if they are after you and you are the target and your life in particular are threatened. That's completely different to when they're after property. At some point when it becomes clear that it's not about your money that we can take now or your car, we want to take you. And then it becomes much more of a personal choice. Are you skilled enough to fight it out, or are you now going to comply to go another round and see where this is going to?
So there's no rules for that, you're saying?
That is very much dependent on what is it they want. Do you want to kidnap you, to take you somewhere, to demand information or money, or do they want to do something there and then, and they want to end your life? That is where you need to assess that. And obviously your options and choices come in at that point in time to resist or to comply. But that is something, once again, if you've never thought this, you won't know. And you're going to say, have my car or have my belongings, not understanding, well, that's not why they're there. You have to be open to understand what is the purpose of, what is the motive behind this intrusion? What is the reason that they are here?
So you have to be very in tune with them and what they're doing. You know, I don't know, you said that every story is different. So one of the things that I was told then by the therapist who called the show and actually did it, and if I bring from the personal example, is that while we were going through the event, me and my wife split the roles when she was speaking in Hebrew to the kids privately, and I was speaking to them in English, but really speaking to the criminals. It came to a point that, and I started telling my kids very clearly, listen, these people are very good people. They just want our money. They just need our stuff. They're not going to harm us. They're going to be fine. And at a later point, when things did escalate after a few hours, one of my children started crying. One of the criminals actually went down to ground level to him and said, did you not listen to your dad? We're good people. We're not here to hurt you. We're here to take your money. Just relax. Is that a common thing?
Yeah, very much so. We just in general don't advise that you speak in a language that they don't understand, because they may be suspicious that you're planning something and trying to give out a sort of a code or an understanding of what they must do, and that they in general don't appreciate the language they don't understand. But if you can explain to them they don't understand English, or I'm just trying to explain to them what's happening, please forgive that we speak in a different language. And if they find it should be all good. But in general, be very careful that always think you plan something, and they don't trust a foreign language to them, and they may react to that.
So we don't want to do anything that will irritate them. Okay, we need to start talking also a bit about, you know, going forward after the event. Because this is a reality, and, you know, the two things we're going to need to look at, and I I think, from both of you. Just number one, where to from here after it happens? How do we go back to life? How do we reduce the trauma? How do we manage ourselves appropriately? And the second big topic that I think is a big discussion is, when I hear this, something like that happened to my friend, how do I react to that? What do I say? What don't I say? Where do I get involved? What are the relevance of, you know, what is the next step in that, in making sure that we are all, you know, on the one hand, supporting each other as friends and community and family, but at the same time, not going into a place of, you know, getting too involved, too invasive, and keeping that balance. We will get to that right after the break. In the meantime, any comments, any questions, anything you'd like to add, 34519 is the SMS line. You could also send us a telegram at 061-895-1019.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and right before the break we spoke about what happens in event of a criminal act, a person being held up, kidnapped, any crime in a horrific situation, and we kind of went through how to prepare, how to move forward. And what I would like to ask you, Dr. Goda, is how do we go with where to from here? Community-wise, social-wise, how do we deal with any of around, you know, if it happened to our friends, if it happened to ourselves, what would be the next step?
So when it comes to trauma, it can be a very personal, individual experience. So the intensity or severity of symptoms may vary depending on the person involved. But the fundamental aspect of trauma is you are confronted with a situation that you couldn't control for, couldn't expect. If you have planned for it, that may assist with kind of moderating some of the symptoms. But if not, it really overwhelms your worldview. So what you'd want to do is get counseling as soon as possible. And then if that was persisting and you're looking at sort of a PTSD diagnosis, you may need sort of a more intensive therapy. You might need medication to assist with some of the symptoms. And from a community or friends basis.
So before that, how would I know? How would I know if it's just normal trauma or is it actually developing into PTSD?
So it's a time period. So what you find, if it's persisted longer than 3 months, 6 months, okay, you're looking at PTSD. And that's symptoms like difficulty sleeping, nightmares about the event, withdrawing or isolating yourself, having an exaggeration.
Shouldn't we generally see after, like, if we've gone to therapy and we've gone through a debrief after like 2 weeks or 3 weeks that we're starting to go back to normal? I mean, I know that PTSD clinically will go after 3 months or whatever, but we should see some kind of better reaction after we've went to some trauma therapy or debrief.
Sure, but I guess there's not one size fits all, and some people may need longer.
Right.
Not that necessarily PTSD, but they may need longer to resolve those symptoms.
Yeah, okay. And community-wise?
So I think it's important that there are spaces where this can be spoken about. You know, and if it has happened to someone that you're close to not rush them also. There shouldn't be an expectation that, okay, 2 weeks down the line, life goes back to normal. Because
exactly,
with trauma, it might pop up at different times also. So you may think you're fine, and then at some point it comes up again. It doesn't necessarily mean you've gone back to square one, but it might mean that you need to have a couple more sessions at that point to deal with that aspect of the trauma.
When that happens to your friend or student in school or client or whatever it is, what are the do's and don'ts, say and don't says when it comes to them?
So don't say, oh, I know exactly what you're going through, because everyone's experience is their own.
I once had somebody tell me, he called me very distressed after a trauma, and he told me, I just want you to know that the next one that tells me, oh, I know exactly what happened, I went through the same thing, or my uncle or my neighbor, I'm going to punch them.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, I calm them down, and we don't do that, but yeah, that was the feeling.
Definitely, and don't bring out your own stories about exactly your uncle or your neighbor. I think it's just to listen and to be there as much as that person needs you. So it might be, you know, around helping them with responsibilities. So if they are struggling and battling and they've got sort of children to tend to, or to just step in and help them out so they can have the time and space they need to process.
And physical help and you know, how we go beyond, you know, anybody. Basically, you're saying support them if they need help with lifts or
yeah,
whatever it is that they need. Armin, from your side in the company, obviously you deal with more complex situations. What would you say is the do and don't do, say and don't say?
Well, I 100% agree with the words, and I was thinking of that. Listen, I think the thing people tend to do is to want to preach and they want to say, but you should have done this and why didn't you do that? And it's really making the other people, a person feel that, you know, I did wrong or acted wrong. Why didn't I? And feel a bit stupid about it. He or she acted. And it's not the right thing to do that. Really listen and show to listen. Don't get into a preaching type of, my opinion, attitude. That person growing into being a victim of the crime, to becoming an overcomer is a process that's different to each and every person going through an incident. And all of us manage that completely different to anybody else. When I was attacked on the N2 last year, my car written off and cement slabs through the window, guys with guns on the side of the road. How I manage that will be completely different to another person that goes through that would manage it. And to respect that difference, I think, is extremely important, because what we don't want is the individual to go into a self-blame and it's because of my conduct that I should have known better type of thing. The guidance part must come in much later and not fresh after a person has been through a very traumatic incident like this. There's never, ever a reason why you must be a victim because of what you do. You know, when we look at victimology and the role of the victim in this all, and a person being in that position, it is so easy that we feel that I did something that sort of encouraged them. I must change my behavior. Nobody ever has the right to infringe on your privacy, your property, and your life, regardless on how you conduct yourself.
I think that's an extremely important point, because we need to separate between what's clever and not clever and what is who's responsible. I would agree that walking down the street and Alex waving a 200 rand bill is not a clever move, but it still doesn't give anybody a right to touch you, to harm you, to take your money, to hurt you. And there's no room for blaming the victim, even if they weren't clever. There's no room for that, because that's not the case. The only criminal is the criminal.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we must stop blaming people when they retaliate or when they defend. The aggressor that is causing this is the only one to blame. I've got a legal background and I understand the law about that you must always act obviously in parallel to the threat to overcome the threat and the proportionality principle to that. I'm 100% with that. I understand it. But it's always the matter of the people defending themselves that's worried about, but what happens if I defend myself? What happens if I use my firearm? What happens if I run over him with a vehicle? What happens, which I did, for example, with my attack, I didn't stop. Now, it is always a matter of we are so worried if we, from our side, defend ourselves. And it is not supposed to be like that. We've got the fullest right as law-abiding citizens to defend ourselves. And if I may say so, pretty much what's happened in Israel, absolutely the case that you may defend yourself. And it's atrocious what has happened. And we cannot just always be the victim and stand back. Be the victim and stand back. You have the fullest right to defend yourself and to make sure that you are the overcomer in this scenario.
And there's no real reason to be worried. Somebody says, well, maybe I overreacted. Maybe I did something wrong. Maybe I'm going to be held accountable afterwards. Or you're saying if you're in threat, you can defend yourself.
Yes, there's the proportionality principle whereby if somebody threatens you verbally, you can't, you know, put out a firearm or a knife and stab or shoot the person. So right. There's obviously proportionality in using the minimum force to overcome the threat that will in the majority of laws in the world apply. But it's all case by case, merit by merit, and incident by incident. We will have to look at this. But, you know, and we can at some point maybe have a discussion on this, but it is certainly not in South African law and in international law that you must just, you know, stand back and you can't defend yourself because you are then in the wrong and will be prosecuted. But surely you cannot, if you could have averted this, kill a person, if you could have, you know, if there was a different option. So, but definitely you don't need to be the victim of an attack, a victim of rape, a victim of home invasion and shot at or murdered, rape in your own home, or been tied up, or whatever the case may be, if you could defend yourself and overcome
then
that, I would rather do that and gain legal advice afterwards, or have training to this so that you understand what is it that you can do and cannot do. On our website on TSU International's training, we have basic legal principles as online that one can go and do, and that you're welcome to enroll in and just go through the legal.
That would be amazing, and I will recommend you say that again. We just need to take one more break, and when we come back, I think we need to deal with a very important question regarding going forward. Short break, and we'll be right back.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch Show by G. I'm going to skip even introducing who I'm in the middle of talking to because of the time, and I do want to get in this question based on time. I meet quite a few people that are carrying a lot of anger towards society, towards communities, towards people in South Africa, and a lot of it we find after years comes from a crime that they went through as younger children, and the feeling of feeling alone in that space, neglected, not cared for, which came out at a much older age with anger, resentment, addiction in any different form. If you would have to give a thought of what can we do after a crime to minimize that, to help our little children not carry this for life as much as we can, what would be your advice?
Well, I think I was immediately thinking of family time, switch the TV off and get around the table in the days that we didn't have TV and we didn't have electricity type of scenario. But what has happened is that, everybody, you must be tough and you must just manage what has happened to you. And everybody's on their phones and on their tablets and on Google. I think it's high time then that also when we have trauma, that we as a family sit together with that, that we allow people to feel the way they feel, and that you do get professional help with people that you trust and in the environment that you feel comfortable in, that you're allowed to ventilate and communicate your anxiety, your stress, and what you fear due to what has happened. It is not easy to live in this life anywhere currently in the world with what we see constantly bombarded on TV and what we experience daily in our lives, just to be able to be strong enough. And especially when you're a child growing up in this, where you're actually supposed to grow up without having all these threats and fears, we are now seeing that you have to be preempting this and rather make sure that you equip them, stand by them, educate them with this, and also allow them to ventilate and talk about their fears. And I've heard it from children when we speak to them in their groups that they have, similar to scout sessions and so forth, where they say, we were not supposed to be thinking about stuff like this. We're not supposed to be fearing life and fearing tomorrow, walking to school. We just want to play and live. And then to have them communicate that, let them ventilate that. Don't have an excuse for that, giving acknowledge for what they're saying and allow them to say and how they feel about it. But then to steer that and guide that is, are we going to manage and address this now? And I think your guest there and other psychologists that's professionals in this field must be approached also to assist in sessions like this with that particular person, but also the bigger family. It doesn't just help you focus on the one person in the family.
The family, the community, the teachers in school, and everybody who is around the victim.
Yes.
We do have to end the show as we completely ran out of time. I see even some messages came through which we're not going to manage to read. However, I will react to the messages later on after the show. So just to say a quick thing, if you can please give me the information again. You said on your website there are tips and things that people can get information how to prepare themselves in this situation. Where would they find that?
That will be on TSU International's site. If they go in on the internet on TSU International, www.tsuint.com. But they will find it if they just put in TSU International or Protection Service, they will find it on the internet.
Okay, amazing. And I'm going to ask Sana to post it on our social media as well, so anybody can get that information. Thank you, Sana, for putting this show together. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Herman Bosman, who is the manager at TSU International Kidnapping. And thank you so much for being with us today. Really, really insightful. Thank you to you, Dr. Gorda del Fabero, and a clinical psychologist and a forensic psychologist. Thank you for your input. Thank you for being with us. Please, God, we should not have you guys too busy, and things should get much calmer and much safer and much better, and only amazing things. In the meantime, keep well, stay safe, and we will be back next week, Monday 2 to 3.